Hi everyone and welcome to the Control Risks podcast. From London, I'm Federico Saleri. And today with Jonathan Wood, we will cover the United States' strategies to reopen the economy amid the COVID-19 pandemic. At the time of the recording, the United States has registered over 840,000 cases and 46,000 deaths. There is no official nationwide lockdown, the federal government advises against non-essential activities, and measures are implemented independently by each state. Our partner Oxford Economics forecasts the US GDP to contract by up to 4% in 2020. And according to the federal data, over 22 million people have already applied for unemployment benefits. I'm here with Jonathan Wood. He's a director of global risk analysis in Washington, D.C. Jonathan, there is quite a rush from the Trump administration to open up America again, as a deep recession may not play well with this campaign as we head into the presidential elections in November. How can the country resume its economic activity without causing a new wave of infections? What would it require and what is it going to look like?
Thanks, Fede. So this is the multi-trillion dollar question. How can the US and other major economies reopen, resume normal business activities without prompting a new wave of the pandemic and requiring further lockdowns and further shutdowns of routine business? In the US, this has been discussed over the past few weeks, both among think tanks within government, at the state government levels as well. And the emerging consensus, and one that I think is shared by other governments globally, is that there needs to be a very substantial expansion of testing, tracing, and isolation capacity in order to allow local and state governments in the US context to identify infected people and keep them from infecting others and thereby suppress a further pandemic wave. That's one component of it. The second piece, and one that was very, of course, tragically on display in Italy, in Spain, in New York, was that there needs to be substantial or sufficient health system capacity as well to manage the continuing epidemic and address any further outbreaks. And this continues to be a problem in the US where there are shortages of personal protective equipment or PPE, things like gloves and masks, where there continue to be shortage of critical care beds in hospitals, as well as specific equipment like ventilators. So I think on the one hand, we need that surveillance capacity so that governments can, state and local governments can monitor the epidemic, but they also need to be assured that they do have sufficient health system capacity in order to respond to any outbreaks or new cases that would emerge as the economy reopens. And neither of those two conditions are currently met in the US, even in the states such as Georgia and Florida that are beginning to reopen certain non-essential businesses, certain public spaces, as early as this week in late April.
We're now seeing groups of Americans taken to the streets in protests of the lockdown orders. These are mainly motivated by economic deterioration and subsequent rise in unemployment rates. These orders are also being implemented by both Republican and Democratic governors. If we take into account President Trump's reaction on Twitter endorsing these protests, do we see this as a contributing element in speeding up the reopening process, or the exact opposite? And is the fact that we have the elections coming up going to influence their policymaking?
So on the topic of the protests themselves, I mean, there has been an increasing number of these nationwide, targeting both state governments, also in some cases, municipal or local governments. They've tended to be fairly small, entirely nonviolent, but they do really speak to this delicate balancing act playing out in the US and countries worldwide between the public health crisis that's occurring as a result of COVID-19 and the economic crisis that's occurring as a result of the policies put in place to manage the public health crisis. And I think you're exactly correct to say that the electoral dynamic in the US is certainly a key factor shifting the balance between the public health and economic crises. In particular, as you rightly point out, President Trump, who intended to campaign very heavily on the strength of the U.S. economy going into re-election, is now confronted with a situation of the worst U.S. economic crisis in nearly 100 years since the Great Depression in the 1930s. So very sort of negative trajectory heading into re-election. And really, his sort of best political hope is that a fairly rapid reopening of the economy leads to a sharp rebound and changes people's perceptions about where the economy and country are heading by the time of the election. Now, that's a huge gamble. And the head of the U.S. Centers for Disease Control, CDC, came out this week and suggested that, you know, a further pandemic wave as a result of reopening might even be worse than the one the U.S. is currently experiencing. So I think at the state level, which is where these lockdown orders have been implemented and where they're going to be lifted, you're going to see a lot of reluctance to do this in a way that significantly raises the public health threat, and particularly where states feel as though they don't have sufficient testing and health system capacity in place. Now, increased testing funding, increasing hospital funding, these have now become major elements of the next congressional federal stimulus package. So we could see some of these constraints begin to relax. But I think that underlying political pressure that we do see to some degree manifested in these protests and demonstrations is only going to increase as the economic crisis deepens over the coming weeks. And that will be a major driver of planning at the state and local levels to reopen the economy.
So you mentioned earlier the conditions that have to be met in order to address further outbreaks. In particular, you listed testing, tracing, and isolation capacity. We've also touched on the overarching economic and social issues. Can you put into context the current plans in place? What do you reckon is the time frame, and maybe just highlighting how businesses are reacting?
So that's a great question. There are different approaches, and some of these have firmer timelines than others. We have, of course, state emergency orders and lockdown orders, some of which are indefinite, but some of which have termination dates as soon as late April, by mid-May, for states like New York and California. And those will be the sort of the test points at which governments are determining if those orders can be relaxed or even lifted. So we are talking about a time frame, really, of the next 2 to 4 to 8 weeks in many states where they're going to be considering how to relax these orders. The federal government, President Trump, last week issued a set of federal guidelines that anticipated sort of rolling 2-week phases in which, you know, very close surveillance of the epidemic and clear evidence that, you know, case counts were decreasing and had sustained decreases over 2-week periods. These would provide the cadence or tempo of initiatives to begin lifting restrictions. And that federal guidance had sort of anticipated that initially restrictions would remain for most non-essential businesses, but some frontline healthcare and other workers would be prioritized in terms of resuming more normal movement. In an intermediate phase, schools, at least some schools, some non-essential businesses would begin to relax, where strict social distancing protocols and other mitigations could be put into place. So the focus there was really on encouraging or working with the private sector and businesses to think about how they could resume operations, in-person operations, by using, you know, strict best practices for social distancing. And I think that was a really interesting point, because one of the things we've been discussing with clients over the last weeks and months is just how much many companies are going to need their own policies inside the business in the US because they're dealing with such a patchwork of different state and local guidelines and policies and restrictions. Ultimately, a company that's operating nationally in many different states or many different cities is going to need to do a lot of thinking internally about their strategy so that employees in one part of the country and employees in a different part of the country have a sort of similar response and approach within the company to getting back to work. And the federal guidelines do seem to bring that out. And ultimately, under those federal guidelines and some which states are pursuing, after you've had, you know, several weeks or a month or more of suppression of new cases, where you have surveillance that allows you to contain any new outbreaks, then you can begin to think about reopening most non-essential businesses and really just trying to focus on identifying and isolating cases. Now, we're still at least 1 to 2 months away from that phase in most parts of the US.
Thank you very much. This is Jonathan Wood. He's a director for Global Risk Analysis in Washington. Visit our website, controlrisks.com, or the core platform for additional content and analysis. I'm Federico Saleri, and thank you all very much for listening to this podcast from Control Risks.